Hi everyone, welcome back to another 21 and Sensory podcast episode with me, Emily. On today's show, I have the awesome Matt. Matt is an ADHD parent, partner, and self-taught artist who is currently located near Baltimore. He specializes in things like ads, album covers, packaging, merch design, social posts and stories, and all things marketing and branding. So I've been following Matt for a while on their epic Instagram account called @prettycoolstrangers. And at this point, I'm basically obsessed with his design video tutorials on how he makes posters and the posts on recommendations for fonts. So yeah, I can't wait to chat to Matt. So Matt, do you want to say hello?
Sure. Hello. Hi, everybody.
Thanks so much for being up for coming on.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited.
Cool. So first question I usually ask people is about their diagnoses. So yeah, no pressure to talk about anything you don't want to, but kind of what led you to go forward for diagnosis and how did it come about?
Sure. Last summer, I was using TikTok a lot and started randomly kind of getting fed content from ADHD creators. And I was just like, these experiences and these habits are really starting to remind me of myself. And I was fairly certain I'd kind of stumbled onto something. I remember seeing something where the creator mentioned that they would always describe themselves as a Swiss Army knife employee. And I had had that on my resume for like years and was like, oh, cool. Ding, ding, ding. That's it. Like without a doubt. So towards the end of the year, I finally got an appointment with nurse practitioner near me. And at the end of our first session, she said, it's safe to say you have ADHD severely. And it was just like super funny. It was like a great way to kind of like kick off that relationship with her. Mm-hmm. As far as like my autism diagnosis, that's a self-diagnosis, which had a lot of indicators. In high school, I read this curious incident of the dog in the nighttime. Mm-hmm. And the main character, and that's like a 15 or 16 year old with autism. And I was like related a lot with a lot of the like pattern recognition, stuff like that, that he had. And then ended up working for several years with a local nonprofit that serves autistic adults with like community integration and stuff like that. Just kind of like saw more and more of these things. And then once I had kids, I quickly discovered some like fun sensory sensitivities and routine challenges. And just kind of like that overall chaos of that new lifestyle. I was just like, okay, cool. Without a doubt, like it's definitely kind of these two things working in tandem.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Wow. That's so interesting. Do you mind me asking what age you were when you got your ADHD diagnosis?
Yeah, it was end of last year. It was just shy of 33, like a month and a half before I turned 33.
Mm-hmm. How did you feel after it? Did you feel like a sense of relief, or did you feel like there was so much coming back to you from like childhood and stuff? I feel like
it was kind of a combination of both. So I was pretty confident in the self-diagnosis. Like I was like, yeah, I have ADHD. That's cool. But I didn't really understand it. Mm-hmm. And I really wasn't sure. It was almost like an imposter syndrome for that. Like, you know, am I making excuses? Am I actually, or is it just something else? So getting the diagnosis from a professional was kind of more just like a personal validation and allowed me, I guess, like an avenue to get more information, get strategies with somebody who understood it a bit more. Mm-hmm. And my therapist actually has ADHD, which is really cool, and is a parent. So she has a lot more insight into things that are more specific, I think, to those neurodivergencies, which have really helped. Mm-hmm. But it definitely has provided a lot of like, why did things in the past happen the way that they did? Why was I making decisions the way that I was? Like, why are the behaviors now that I'm like working on improving happening the way that they are? It's not just me. It's things like, you know, rejection sensitive dysphoria is like a big topic in our household now. And, you know, stuff like that has allowed me to kind of look at myself and how I got here in a much different light.
Mm-hmm. It's really interesting to hear as well that like you found a good therapist, because a lot of people I talk to really struggle to find someone who gets them. And the fact that your therapist has ADHD and children, that sounds like you found someone in like the same boat as you almost.
Yeah. Her children are older, but like she even as far as like writing like medications and stuff like that, whether I'm like apprehensive or not, she's amazing. I like couldn't say enough. Like she's recommended like journals and like planners and stuff that she thinks would help. Cause I suck at those things. Like most people with ADHD, I just can't stick with keeping myself organized for very long. Mm-hmm. So she just has experience and insight and knowledge that I just like am so, so grateful for. And it just happened like, again, just kind of at random.
Mm-hmm. And sort of before you saw like the ADHD content on TikTok, did you have any other inkling, any other idea at all? Like was it ever mentioned in your childhood? I'd be interested to know.
Not ADHD specifically. Again, like the autism thing, it always kind of stuck out from like high school on. But like I was a server for like 11 years and was like, there's no way I can have autism because I know how to talk to people, which was really just like masking over, you know, essentially yeah. Realized I had just been masking most of my life. And like, you know, I know how to talk to people. I have jobs. I'm like, you know, I was always really good in school, but that was never really picked up on as like, you know, people are like, you don't study, but you know all this stuff. You don't practice your instrument, but you can play everything like really well. That's cool. You know what I mean? Like I just was quick at picking stuff up like that. And as I kind of, I guess, moved into like the real world, there just like wasn't a lot of direction. So I just kind of fell into a lot of like weird habits and like just this like, meh, I'm just like making money, paying bills and not really doing anything. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it just kind of came out of left field and then like just snowballed like really exponentially into like, oh, I'm this complete, like there's parts of me that are the same, but I'm a much different person than I think I am. Mm-hmm. And it's like helped with a lot of like growth work and a lot of just like, I think just like introspection.
Mm-hmm. It's really interesting to hear like how you kind of came kind of round to it almost. And like you talking about like kind of jobs and stuff like that, do you feel like, you mentioned kind of masking and stuff like that, do you feel like you've had to do that throughout like any jobs you've had? Like have you ever kind of explained to an employer like the difficulties you might kind of have, or do you think you've always kind of like suppressed like how you were feeling?
I think that was most of it. When I was like when I was a server, I just didn't really know. I had no idea. So there were a lot of struggles that came with that job that I think would have been better explained had I known. Like if it was really slow and there wasn't a lot going on, I would just try as desperately as I could to get out of the building, like switching shifts. Like I would just berate people to get out of the building because I was just bored. It was just like that stagnancy of like, I'm so understimulated. I don't want to be here. This is a waste of my time. I got to go. And that got me in a lot of like trouble and a lot of criticism with that. As I moved out of that into like, I guess, more professional settings, I still didn't really have an idea. And I think it was less masking as much as, I think at the time I really felt like the needs and or I'm trying to think of the word, accommodations that I guess I thought I needed, I couldn't advocate for, or that I wouldn't get if I advocated for them. So my last job was a different nonprofit that did like family services in Maryland. And I was able to, once I got my ADHD diagnosis and was like leaning towards that, like say, hey, these like overhead lights in the back are really bright. Can we take the light bulbs out of them? Or, hey, if I have to sit through an hour and a half, 2 hour meeting with you guys, I need to go on like a 20, 30 minute walk around the complex after that to like decompress, which was helpful. But it, you know, it's having a 9-to-5 was just something I realized. It was literally right after I got diagnosed, got medicated, and quit my job like 4 days later. I just was like, I can't do this anymore. I need to do something different. I needed the freedom and the flexibility that came with, you know, being at home.
Mm-hmm. And that leads beautifully onto my next question, which is chatting about what you're currently doing and your design journey. And I know you've kind of mentioned to me when this kind of all like started, and you've kind of given us a bit of a kind of hint, but do you want to explain sort of your kind of career shift?
Yeah. So I started just like many other millennials, I kind of made my way again onto TikTok, which I don't use anymore. I literally don't have an account anymore. It's so funny how I got so much information from it and it was like, I'm out. Mm-hmm. But like right towards the end of 2020, I just quit a previous job, and just like the weight of that year and COVID and raising a newborn, I was just in like a really, really bad place. And I started getting tutorials just like Photoshop and design in general. And around the beginning of 2021, I was just playing around in like Canva of all things and just like putting stuff together and piecing things together. And my wife was like, hey, you should start putting your work online. Try to make some friends. You know what I mean? Like do something with this creative outlet to kind of like connect. So I did that and it started off fine. I met some people, really liked what I was doing, and I was designing almost every day. Like we would literally, I'd go to work or be at home, get our daughter to sleep, and then just like design until I was tired. So then a couple months later, I started working in Photoshop and just started like using the tutorials to teach myself. I ended up like teaching myself a lot. And as that progressed, I did a lot more with like texture, and my style started to evolve into the kind of like what it is now, this like weird, bold, controlled chaos kind of thing. It started to grow, and I was like, okay, this is interesting. And then kind of within the first 6 months, we had a couple of pretty cool, like well-paying ish jobs. And I was like, dang, like this might be something more than just like making cool stuff and putting it on the internet. Like I might be able to like make cool stuff and get paid for it and not have to work for somebody else. And it just kind of took off. I mean, it was so super unexpected. You know, I was a novice. Like I had no idea what I was doing. And then by the end of last year, like I said, I quit my job 4 days after I got diagnosed. It was like, cool. I just jumped into the deep end of freelancing. I'm a professional freelancer now. And it was like 9 months. Mm-hmm. So it's just been, fun and challenging and a lot of things. And it's just, you know, turning a hobby into a job has been weird, finding ways to make it feel like more of a hobby and find ways to make parts of it a job has mm-hmm. been interesting. And it's still a process that we're going through. But my wife and I just like really educated ourselves from the start and talked to people I had met online about writing contracts that kept you protected, how you should charge for this sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. So since we started taking on professional work, I feel like we've at least put on the facade at the beginning that we knew what we were doing. Yeah. And now we do know what we're doing. And I don't know when that happened. I don't know like when we like kind of clicked, but it didn't take very long. And it was really interesting how everything has just progressed in such an unconventional way.
Mm-hmm. That's so exciting. I mean, the fact that, you know, 4 days after you were like, right, I'm not doing this 9-to-5 like anymore, and you've actually found something that really works for you. And like, it's really interesting to hear you saying about like, because I was going to ask you about like, how do you juggle the more kind of like admin side of things and like invoicing and contracts and like keeping yourself like, you know, and your work protected. But it sounds like you figured it out. And I feel like with like freelance work, there's this kind of almost like you kind of have to fake it till you make it in terms of like working out your rates and stuff like that. Like no one really teaches you. You kind of have to find your own way. But it sounds like you and your wife have like worked it out and been like surrounded by the right people that can kind of help you with that sort of thing. So that's really good.
Yeah, we were fortunate. There was a couple of people that I talked to about just like pricing and kind of, you know, like I'm not going to charge a local business the same as I'm going to charge like Nike if they mm-hmm. came calling. Like it's scaling that, putting value to your work. And I will say, like, I'm terrible at the admin side of things. Like, I'm horrific at them. Mm-hmm. And basically, my wife had just, her name's Fee, if I use that at all. She came in and just, like, she is my manager now. She does all of my clients. She's like, I'm good at this stuff. You're not good at this stuff. Let me handle it for you. I will, you know, I'll go to battle for you. I'll make sure you're not getting taken advantage of. She takes the information that the clients can give us, which is sometimes really messy and confusing, and translate it into like Google Sheets that I can just, or Google Docs that I can just work out of and cross things off of a list. Mm-hmm. So she's really like kind of the engine that keeps like, she just keeps everything running smoothly so that I can focus on creating, educating, and like doing the parts of this that I love so that it is something that we can like wake up and be excited about. Mm-hmm. So I just want to give so much credit to her. She's, I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't have her step in the way that she did.
Mm-hmm. And I'd be interested to know as well, like, how do you find, like, in terms of your diagnosis, like, how does that kind of, like, what strengths and maybe weaknesses does it give you in terms of, like, design work? Like, I'd be interested to know, because I feel like a lot of people I speak to have like quite intense like hyper focus and stuff like that and can kind of lose track of time, so like things like that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's definitely part of it. I would say that after getting my diagnosis, and especially now, like having the time to have continued working and just look back at what I have done, what I had done before that, I really think that like my neurodivergency has fueled basically this entire thing. I'd say that the design in general has become somewhat of that hyper focus and like special interest in a way where it's what I want to do all the time. It's like really like what I want to do almost all the time. And I think it helped me get the recognition and the growth and all the stuff that I got, because I started making things that like my neurodivergent brain wanted to see. And that's like, you know, different than the norm. Mm-hmm. You know, so a lot of people were making things that look similar or making things that were, you know, just more by the book, art school-y kind of like stuff. And I just was like, I am tired of seeing that. I'm going to make weird stuff that looks different that I really like. Mm-hmm. And I'm fortunate that other people really like that too. Mm-hmm. But it just came from this like obsession. I like really got into trying to make my digital work look real, like it had been printed out, worn out for a while, and then scanned back in or something at some point. Mm-hmm. And I just got so focused on like, how do I achieve this? How do I achieve this? How do I achieve this? Mm-hmm. And those are a couple of the things that have led to the, like the growth and the client work and the stuff that we've done. But that's also come at, like I mentioned, like admin stuff is something I still struggle with. Like even in trying to make real, like the educational reels and trying to do other stuff like that, I have a terrible time like conceptualizing them ahead of time, scheduling stuff like that out. Even if I do that, executing those things, and then like the hyper focus, you know, the time blindness is really like the thing that gets me the most. Is I'll be like, hey, I'm gonna run downstairs, and if you can handle the kids for like an hour, I'm gonna just go run down and do something. Mm-hmm. And then it's like 3.5 hours later, I haven't looked at the clock, I haven't drank water, I skipped a meal, and I'm like out of breath, but I made something really cool and I'm really happy about it. But it's just funny how it like plays on both ends. Mm-hmm. Where I get this like weird, cool, creative superpower, but then I'm also like hindered by the fact that now that I'm doing it full time, there's other boring, undesirable work that I don't want to do that, you know, is kind of in my hands. Mm-hmm. So I'm just like working on ways to get better at that.
Mm-hmm. And like in terms of like ways of working, like your design process, like I remember on your website, and I'm gonna literally reference it, you put I rarely reference inspiration or plan out my work ahead of time, preferring to let my brain and inspiration take the wheel and put something new out into the world. And I'm always like really fascinated by people's design processes. So I'd be keen to like chat a bit more about what yours kind of looks like, and also like defining your own style. Like you said, like you, I feel like you really have a style in which when I scroll on Instagram, I know it's from you. So I'd be interested to know, like, how did you find that as a journey as well?
So, yeah. So I would describe kind of like the way I get into anything that I make is kind of chaotic. I usually, compared to most other designers that I've talked to or seen, you know, a lot of people I think will like go to Pinterest or look on Instagram or try and find something that like speaks to them, you know, a vintage ad or something a little more funky, and kind of use that as a starting point. Typically I get inspired by like an album or a lyric or a photo I see or some, you know, mental healthy self, you know, quote or something. And I'll just open Photoshop and just start playing around. I'll kind of like type out what I'm working with, like artist's name or the quote or parts of the lyrics, and kind of figure out what are the words here I want to focus on, what is, you know, and that's about as much thought as, like, I think like concentrated thought usually goes into it, is like, what's the typography look like? And I usually only do like one or two iterations, or do like 50 and get off my computer. I'm like, this isn't working, I'll just come back to it. And from there, I just kind of go off feel. I'll move things around in a funky way, so it's like asymmetrical but balanced. Find a cool picture that I feel like goes with it. Or like, you know, I've been doing like vintage car stuff lately, even though I don't know anything about cars. I just like the way they look. And, you know, oh, here's a really cool picture of this really funky, weird car that I found. How can I make this look even weirder and put it in a funky spot on like the page? And yeah, it just kind of goes off. I don't know if instinct, I guess, is the right word at this point, but just like what feels right. It's kind of hard to, I think, verbalize it in a way that makes sense. It's just stuff. I just like find stuff that I want to put into the design and then just rearrange it until it fits. So it kind of depends if I'm doing something like really bold and busy with like bright yellow text that's like hard to read and a whole bunch of other stuff, or if I'm doing a, you know, a simpler, like a car layout or something like that. It, you know, I think I've gotten a lot of the following and recognition that I have because of that, kind of the controlled chaos and like the texturing stuff that I do. And again, I think that finding my way into doing that stuff just came from a need to make something that I wasn't seeing already. I've even had a couple of people, which has meant a lot to me, say things like, you've basically kind of created a genre of design because this stuff didn't exist before. And that's where I say things like, I think autism and ADHD really helped with that, because I was bored with seeing everything else that was out there and just started doing something different by accident. Yeah, it's just really weird how it all came together, and the texture stuff had a lot to do with it. People were like, how are you doing this? You know, how outside of the work itself, it was like that extra level that took it from being just something on a screen to this, like, the nostalgia, I think, is a word that gets thrown around a lot about my work, is whether it's busy or simple or whatever. There's just like a sense of, I've seen this before, I've held this before, this has been somewhere before it was here, but it's all just done on a computer.
It's almost like that kind of lived in kind of look almost. It looks like you said, you've taken it from somewhere, like scanned it back in, like properly, like, I don't know, just kind of, you have like made your own genre, and that's like the best way of putting it, I think. I'm going to put all your links in the show notes so that people can like reference what we're talking about. But I think, yeah, like I said, like your style's really recognizable. And I think that's really hard to do as a designer. Like, have something stand out so much that people know it's you.
Yeah. It's crazy. Like, it's just, you know what I mean? Like, this whole thing has just been an accident. Like, it's just been like this amazing, weird accident. And it's funny to see now, a little over a year and a half in, with everything I've learned about myself and learned about like being a graphic designer and all that stuff, to just like look back at it and understand a little bit more how it got here. But it's still pretty like, it still feels weird to say stuff like that.
And I think it's pretty amazing as well that you know, you clearly have an eye for this. Like, you don't have a design background that I'm aware of. Please correct me if I'm wrong. But
I was working in nonprofit communication. So like, I ended up, again, making like MailChimp newsletters and Canva social media posts, usually off of the templates that they had provided. And every once in a while, I would open an Adobe program. I took graphic design 101 11 years ago at a community college. Amazing. And that was like, you could barely call what I made at the time graphic design. So, and it was nothing close to anything that I'm doing now. So really the work that I'm doing now isn't built off of anything that I had experience with.
Which is insane. Like the fact that you've totally self-taught yourself, and I don't know, and the fact that you're willing to share how you do it, because I feel like you come across so many designers online, you're like, how the hell did they do that? And the fact that you're like really keen to be like, look, this is how I add this texture, or like light leaks, or like just, I don't know, even things like adding like half tones and things like that, like I feel like they're really fiddly unless you know how to do them, and your videos make them so simple. Because I just feel like when you're teaching yourself, a lot of stuff is hidden in menus. And unless you come across a video, you're like, oh, I've been doing this thing a really slow way, and Matt's doing it really quickly.
I still feel like that. Like, I literally am trying to get better at professional development. And one of those professional development things is finding like beginner tutorials about Photoshop and finding tools and things that I don't know about. And like, I got really good at doing what I do the way that I do it. But I don't really know that much else about Photoshop outside of what I've experimented with and gotten really good with. So I literally want to go back and watch beginner Photoshop, like intro level stuff, and see what I've missed out on. And it's not about speed. It's, you know, it's nice to have a more efficient workflow. It's nice to do things more efficiently. I'm not worried about cranking work out at light speed. I do, especially being limited with kids and client work and all the other stuff that I'm doing, want to make sure that I am doing the work I'm doing as efficiently as possible. Even if something takes me 4 hours, I want to make sure that I'm doing it right in those 4 hours. And just as far as sharing what I know, again, I was kind of afforded this opportunity by accident by literally seeing creators sharing their little tidbits of information. And it just has become really important to me to help other people either discover that they can do this, or if they're interested in it, finding ways to do it in the way that they want to. And then whether that's as a professional or just in their free time, you know, being able to help one other person and or more, that's just like where I find so much more gratification and like fuel to kind of get up and make something today, whether it's educational or personal.
And how do you find, kind of talking more about like educational, personal, and client work, how do you find like juggling them? Like, do you have a kind of, I don't know, like a day for yourself kind of thing where you make your own things? Or like, I know you mentioned that your wife kind of encouraged you to post online. Like, how did you start, like, you know, posting on Instagram and stuff like that? And how do you balance it?
It's definitely gotten harder. I mean, our first daughter was just shy of a year when I started. So, you know, it was a little bit easier to say, hey, I'm going to step out and work on this for a little bit. But again, a lot of that was happening after hours. Now with another newborn and a toddler, things have become a lot more interesting. And we're working and getting better at me having like set time to focus on whatever I feel like focusing on. And I was finding a lot of frustration with, this is like Instagram specific jargon, but like, they started shifting algorithms and stuff like that to where they're trying to catch up with TikTok. They're pushing a ton of video content and a lot of like creators like myself who are making still designs, photographs, stuff like that. We're just seeing like, there was just a lot of frustration to be had when that shift happened. And I was just killing myself, like forcing creativity, forcing inspiration, like, you have to sit down and design something today because you're barely getting X amount of whatever as it is. And now that I've kind of shifted what I'm doing to make that video content, it's actually been really refreshing and has allowed my personal creative processes to, I guess, get the time that they need to kind of like ruminate and or come about naturally. Mm-hmm. So I can make a handful of videos in a week and make one or two things for myself. And I'm seeing better results as far as social media goes because of that. Mm-hmm. So it allows me more flexibility to focus on client work. It allows me an ability to make video that I want to make, and I'm getting better at that over time. I'm getting, again, more efficient with that over time. And we're actually looking at ways to kind of build on that by looking into like offering webinars, moving into YouTube to provide like longer format stuff, because it's even with as, I guess, in-depth as I can get in 45 seconds, 30 seconds on Instagram, yeah. I know neurotypical and neurodivergent that that isn't the easiest way to get that information. So moving into YouTube and being able to provide slower paced things that can be paused and rewatched easier, they're more digestible, and that allows more people to get that information that I'm like so desperate to get out. Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting to hear like how you're shifting with the times and trying to like not stay relevant, but like just stay on top of the algorithms and stuff, because yeah, it's exactly that, that if you're an artist or a designer and you're making static stuff at the moment, there seems to be this real thing around like reels, and I know they're really like fiddly to make, but just the fact that you appreciate that actually longer form content could suit people who are like neurodivergent as well, like that's really good. And I definitely think like being able to pause and like come back to stuff as someone who is autistic as well, like it's great to be able to do things at your own pace. And like you say, there's only so much you can fit in, like I don't know, 40 to like 60 seconds or whatever, like,
and it's got, and it's quick, like that's the thing, is yeah. It's like I, what I typically do, even if I see something that I can't pause, I'll just screen record it and download it on my phone and then just like half the speed on it. Mm-hmm. I'm like, cool, I can follow this. I can pause it. It doesn't happen a ton, but that's what I've done. But I'm like, that's a pain for most people. I don't want people to have to do that. So it's, again, with taking, you know, I just upgraded my PC to allow me to do stuff like that when I get there in a way that's going to be better quality and like provide what I'm looking to provide instead of mm-hmm. just trying to do it as easily as possible.
Mm-hmm. I guess that would be good for like tutorials as well, where you can like screen record what you're up to and stuff.
Exactly. Like I can run Photoshop and screen record at the same time, which is on my 2016 laptop I was using, not possible.
Mm-hmm. So. And how like at the moment, do you like filming stuff on your phone and stuff? Like obviously you're filming your screen. Do you just film like your whole making the like poster say and then cut it down, or are you constantly like starting and stopping to like show your process, if that makes sense?
When I'm doing like poster builds and stuff like that, it is I could not start and stop. If I had to start and stop while I was I'd get nowhere. Mm-hmm. So typically what I'll do is I'll make something and I'll be like, oh, this would be kind of cool to show off, and I'll like save a second file and then break that into how I'm going to show this off. So some of them are like simpler. It's just kind of like steps to like mm-hmm. a sound, and it's just like boom, 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 boom. So I can kind of group stuff and show it, show more, and that's easy. Mm-hmm. Some of the more like quick and like upbeat stuff that I do, I kind of just storyboard in my head as I'm going. I'll be like, okay, I have this amount of time, and I'll just like film a whole bunch of clips of me just typing stuff in and for a second time, or dragging stuff in to where it already was, and then just piecing that together after the fact. So it kind of changes from time to time, but yeah, I mean, it's just, I still even think moving forward, especially for reels, I just have like a little tripod that I set up on my desk in really janky ways and just film my screen. Mm-hmm. I feel like it feels less professional, which I think is better. Like, I'm not a full studio service. I think it provides a little bit of like realism while also allowing for more flexibility and, like, even as silly as it sounds, I think like dynamic, more dynamic angles than just like a flat screen recording, which can be pretty like boring, I think, to look at for 30, 40 seconds.
And I also feel like that kind of style makes it look more like doable, like for like anyone. Like, you don't have to be someone that, you know, has like a background in graphic design, like, to be able to experiment in Photoshop. Like, I feel like you make it feel like more accessible than some other kind of more polished sort of like reels and things like that.
Yeah, because it, again, like, that's what I want to do. And it's this funny balance between how can I make this educational and engaging? Like, how can I get it to, like, how can I make people want to watch this and learn from what they're watching? And again, it's just something that I'm like figuring out with over time, where I used to make stuff that was, I think, way too quick. And I've seen other creators who will have a lot of success with what their tutorials are that are like really, really, in my opinion, like much slower paced. But I think it just is allowing accessibility to other and more people by like slowing it down and showing the, like, I think, more intricate parts of the process.
And I also like appreciate as well that, like, we see you from time to time. Like, you throw in a bit of humor, you throw in a bit of like yourself, so people kind of get to know the person behind it, which I feel like not everyone does. And it is quite, I imagine it's slightly scary, but it is quite nice to kind of almost get to know you as well.
That was something I really struggled with. I think for a while I was, I think, happy with the anonymity that came with what I was doing. Because it went from being like, I'm Matt and I make stuff and I have 500 followers to, oh my God, I'm a person. And it I think it came down to a lot of like, I don't want to be judged. I don't want this. I don't want people to think I'm weird. I don't want whatever. And yeah, it's definitely been very, very scary. But I think, again, like, finding ways to, like, I think like most neurodivergent people, I have a pretty like weird, out of just like left field sense of humor. Like, it's just, you know, that like jump, like, what? Like, what? And I think finding ways to take that and relate it to design, it's been challenging. And I think it just is, it's helpful to see that, like, there's a person making this stuff. There's a person teaching you, and it's not like, and they have a personality. I feel like I see that from other people, and I just told myself, why are you so scared to do that too? So I'm trying to not be, and I enjoy making the silly, stupid stuff. Like, I enjoy making an idiot out of myself sometimes online. So it's just, it's been fun to get into. It's still a little bit scary. It's still a lot of it scary, but it usually is received well. And then that kind of helps me be a little less scared the next time I have like an idea to do something and show my face of all things on the internet.
And how do you find the kind of off the back of that? Like, how do you find the kind of growth that you've gone through and followers? I know followers and likes aren't everything, obviously. They really help in terms of like self-esteem and like knowing how you're doing kind of thing. But how have you found the fact that you have over 100,000 followers and kind of looking at your stuff?
It's funny to me, because I think that with the variety of things, like, I'll do a mental health quote and then do like a pop punk lyric from 2002 and then a vintage car poster. Like, I'll just like boom, boom, boom. And those will be three things I put out in a row. And I think there are a lot of people, I think, in my audience from a lot of different places. So I literally just took like a 2.5 week break for the first time without posting anything, because I was getting really like comparative with what I was doing with X amount of followers to other accounts who, like, even that I'm friends with, who also have a similar following, who get a lot more engagement than I do. But they do their thing and they do it really well. And they're usually covering like a single subject matter. So it's been interesting to like get to where I have this following and am understanding more and more that as people are leaving and coming in, and there's like this turnover of like follower count and stuff, that as long as I continue to do what I want to do, I will be supported by people who want to see that. And I think it's follower counts and stuff like that, I think overall are helpful, and it has allowed me to like land clients that I wouldn't have gotten otherwise. But it's kind of like that dart throw. Like if you have enough people looking, somebody who wants to pay you to do that is going to see it. But I know there's tons of accounts and like people I personally enjoy the work of a ton who have a couple thousand followers, 10,000 followers, and they're doing like professional work for Halsey and bands I listen to and like all these other people because they got an in the industry and then started posting, or you know what I mean? And I went from posting to getting an in these industries. And so I think people think that X amount of followers means you're, you know, rich or famous or whatever. And it's like, at the end of the day, it's helpful to, you know, it's helpful for my business at this point to get exposure. So, and as I'm looking to move into educational stuff, you know, I put a texture pack on my store that people can buy, and the more designers who I can teach that get inspired to do this and are looking at my work, cool, that's an extra $15 that I wouldn't have had. And I get the added benefit of another person is making stuff now with this thing that I provided for them. So it's a weird balance of prospective clients, people who just want to see what I'm making, and graphic designers who want to learn and get things from me so that they can make their own stuff.
Throughout this, I've just said, that's really interesting, but it is.
It is. It's weird. Like, it's just so...
It's such a varied audience. And I do feel like nowadays, like, Instagram, especially for like illustrators and designers, is like such a great portfolio. I know like website portfolios are the way to go. Like I have one and it is professional, but I feel like a lot of people just go straight to Instagram to see what you're doing and your kind of style and how you work kind of thing. And I feel like you said, it's really good for your business. It brings in a range of people and hopefully some more clients. But I think people do have this, I don't know, misunderstanding that, you know, followers account for, you know, how like popular success. Your work is. Yeah, and success and who's reaching out to you and stuff like that, when actually it doesn't always, like, it's tricky to explain that.
And it's something that I, you know, when I started this, looking at around at these other accounts who had these big followings, I felt the same. I'm like, these people must be so successful and they must have all this stuff. And I think there are a lot of people that when they do that single thing and they do it really, really well, probably have more success with like selling prints and, you know, getting specific types of clients and getting specific types of jobs. But we've looked a little bit at, I think, diversifying and kind of taking educating specifically and having kind of like another pretty cool Strangers thing that's like specifically for that, and having like a nice concentrated audience of aspiring or like novice beginner designers, where, you know, I'm not pushing other people away, quote unquote, by, you know, hey, these are some cool fonts you can use, or this is a process I do. And someone's like, I just want to see another cool car poster. Why am I seeing this on my feed? See ya. And again, like that stuff at this point doesn't bother me. Like, I'm like, okay, if you don't want to be here, don't be here. That's fine. I want, you know, I'll lose 20,000 followers if it means that I've in that time, like, gotten a whole bunch of people who do want to see what I'm doing. And I think at this point, it's a lot more like teaching and trying to do like community building as for like, you know, that kind of that lingo of like community building. And I think that goes along with showing my face, showing my personality, and being like a human being behind tutorials, behind cool designs, like behind stuff. Oh, that's Matt. Like, Matt makes this stuff. Matt is doing pretty cool Strangers. But I, we're looking at kind of having a place where I think that educational stuff would be even more, I guess, like useful, more well received, and have an opportunity to get to, I think, individuals who I don't have access to now.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's a really big kind of market for that sort of thing in the kind of whole like Skillshare and Udemy and YouTube tutorials. Like, I feel like that's how people are shifting careers, a bit like you've done yourself. You've, you know, were seeking out tutorials and things like that to teach yourself to then, okay, I know it was a happy accident, but maybe some people are just learning online rather than spending ridiculous amounts at university.
Yeah, I think that a lot of art school stuff and a lot of those design schools are teaching you how to get into an agency, work for somebody else, and make marketing. Like, this is how you do these things. This is how you print stuff. This is how you put like products that labels together. This is how you make things so that they are, I guess, more aesthetic for a buyer or a customer, stuff like that. And I feel like they also just are teaching you the same, like you're in a class of 30 people, you're all being taught to do the same thing. Whereas if you're just learning processes, you can use those to apply to whatever you want to do. I literally like put a couple of items into my shop that say, don't go to art school. It was like, something I was just like, don't, like, there's so many opportunities and like so many places to learn online for free. And any of that other like professional knowledge, you can just go pick up. Like, there's still like basic fundamentals of graphic design that I can't keep straight in my head, like really basic terminology, or like, and I just Google it. I just look it up when I need to look it up. And you know what I mean? Just like go, like you said, fake it till you make it. And eventually the stuff sets in. Eventually you figure it out. Eventually you don't feel like you're brand new at it anymore. And I just don't think it takes 4 years and, you know, thousands of dollars to do that. And then you end up doing it, I think, similarly to a lot of other people. Anyways, like, it just seems, like you said, there's a lot of better routes. And I get asked about those routes all the time. You know, like you said, Skillshare. I tell people, I'm like, when I have the time, when that, like, when I'm able to move into that, I'm moving into that. But like I said, a newborn and a toddler and like trying to get established in my first year as a freelancer, like, you know, I feel like I've been luckier than probably most. Again, I have a fair platform to start, you know, but like, we've done okay. We've like made it through this year, and like, you know, but it's still taking time and effort to, you know, even with, you know, this following that people might perceive that I have, that it's not easy. And, you know, we're working really, really hard to do the, what we need to, so that not only are we getting established, but like, we're enjoying what we're doing.
And I also want to point out that you keep saying we, because like, it's really clear that it isn't just you, it is a team effort. And how grateful you are for your wife and what she does. And I think that's really nice to hear. You know, you're not shy about saying like, this is a team effort. Like, we're doing this together and we're working things out together. And I think that's really nice to hear that you're acknowledging that.
Yeah. I like, again, I wouldn't be where I am, and I wouldn't be able to do, like, I wouldn't be able to teach. I wouldn't be on this podcast. Like, I wouldn't be doing the things and finding the success that I'm finding without her. And she's even pitched in on like the creative end. She designed an album cover that we needed designed. We were working with like a, I don't know if they're a nonprofit, but they help like indie artists and small artists like get established and do releases. So we were doing like some pretty like affordable album covers. And she was like, I'd like to try one. I was like, cool, go for it. We just did a, like a cover photo for a podcast. It was like an illustration. They wanted like something illustrated, this vintagey like music style with like a character. I don't know how to do that. And she handled like the project basically start to finish and like by herself and did the creative work. She's like, when we get some of these webinars, she's like very tough, lovey, very like, and she wants to advocate for these people who are, you know, not protecting themselves contractually or charging like 15, 20 bucks an hour to do creative work or doing it for free. So like these webinars that we're talking about for like educating people and writing contracts and all that, she's like, I'm teaching those. I want to do those. and we're just I am, and she is looking for more ways to make this even more of like a cohesive thing, like working on projects together, working on teaching together, working on building this out together. Mm-hmm. And like I said, again, she helps digest information that people who don't know anything about design give us into a way that I can then like go above and beyond to like give them what they're looking for.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. I need someone like that. Like, it sounds great to be able to like, because I like working with clients, as much as I love them, you never get a very clear brief, and to have someone actually break it down for you and make it make sense, like, that's huge.
Yeah, and she's not like, we literally had something in the last couple months, like someone emailed us that like stereotypical, like, we just want to make it pop. And I told her, I was like, you need to go back and you need to ask, like, and she's literally like, what do you mean by make it pop? Do you mean this? Do you mean this? Do you mean this? Mm-hmm. And it like, whereas I would probably be like, okay, I'll try and figure it out. You know, like she's not afraid to like go to battle for that and get, you know, she's not afraid to get the information that not only we need, but like that I need specifically. Mm-hmm. We ask for a lot of mood boards. I don't know if a lot of people do that, but like, I need mood boards. I want to know, because I work so much off feel. Mm-hmm. And like, I want to know, like, what do you feel about this project? Like, if you could do it yourself, what would you use for inspiration? Okay. And it helps me with like a starting point. It helps me with, you know, I think figuring out outside of like the language that they're using, which can be kind of confusing sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's a lot easier to like, it's kind of like actions speak louder than words. Like, I don't care what you're saying. Show me what you want, or show me like roughly what you want, and then I'll know what I'm supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. And I guess that starts you off on the right foot as well. Cause I feel like so many times, like in the past, I've like gone down a route and they're like, that's not what we're looking for. And you're like, I wouldn't know which way to go if you gave me something to go on.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel the same way. It's like, you know, we do so much up front now because mm-hmm. we had a couple of projects that were like that, where it's like we did it we felt really good about it.
Yeah.
And they were like, this isn't at all what I asked for. And I'm like, I end up just sitting kind of like just confused and like mm-hmm. frustrated almost too. I get like, and I'm like, this is exactly what you asked for. And it's not like, you know, but there's, you know, that like miscommunication, and we're able now to kind of go back with kind of some like canned questions and canned responses to really get what we need to be successful. Mm-hmm. And Fee even is able to like translate some of the things again, like we're really fortunate enough to do like an album packaging and album release with an artist with Sony and RCA earlier this year. Cool. And the creative direction of the project shifted a lot as I started adding like my own flair into like the rounds of revisions. Like, I sent them logos over, but I like put them all in a sheet with some like cool, like some pretty prototypical like my stuff, which wasn't really part of the creative direction. Mm-hmm. And the artist was like, I guess, influenced by that. So as like the creative direction of the project literally started to change by the things I was including originally for what they asked for, to the point that everything got really muddled. And Fee literally, she found one thing I had made in January and was like, this, just this one thing, that's your creative direction. And it just clicked. I was like, cool. And then the rest of the project was like a breeze. It was so funny, like how I went from having literally no idea what I was supposed to do to like everything kind of just coming with ease mm-hmm. for like the next couple weeks.
Mm-hmm. It's having that, isn't it? Just having something to go off and something to not even reference, but just like you said, like a look or a feel. Like, I can see how important that is to your process as well. I was also going to ask you, what do you do in any spare time that I'm not sure if you have spare time? By the sounds of it, it sounds like you're very busy with work and family, but what do you like to do? And I know you mentioned like special interests as well. And obviously like design seems to be one of those, like, how do you enjoy your spare time?
Yeah. I, when, in like what we kind of outlined, I was like, I don't even know if I have an answer for this. But like, you know, with baby number two in the mix, we're just like figuring out what that looks like. Hobbies and special interests have kind of taken not a back seat, but I've just had to figure out like when I have the time, what I can do and how. Mm-hmm. So when I'm able to like get out and get like walks or get up in the morning, I really enjoy like audiobooks and podcasts that kind of align with like my own personal growth and like trauma healing stuff that I'm working on. I love listening to music when I can, nice soundproof headphones, and like just kind of getting out of it, like out of the minutia. Mm-hmm. And just like, I love watching YouTube videos about like Earth's history and just like outer space. I think with like how kind of chaotic and busy and stressful and like how personal things can feel with like sharing art online, I really enjoy like learning about that stuff, because it's just kind of, it's like that whole little blue dot philosophy of like, we're these tiny things on this tiny thing in this mm-hmm. giant thing. And I just like really enjoy learning about that stuff. Mm-hmm. So I also just spent an inordinate amount of time watching Bluey and Monsters at Work on the couch with my toddler. That's just like, and I've just honestly come to really enjoy doing that too.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
but
nice.
Yeah, it's very limited as far as like the personal me time. Mm-hmm. But
I can understand that. I think, like you say, like with, you know, two young children, it's a lot to even manage being able to like, you know, work.
Yeah, it's I honestly, outside of like the neurodivergency fueling a lot of this stuff, I think having my daughters, but especially my toddler, like I feel like I hold myself more accountable to do things the right way. And, mm-hmm. you know, like be, you know, so when she grows up and as she's growing up, she can see that she has opportunities. She can go after the things that she wants to do in a way that is atypical. Mm-hmm. And that I'm doing it right, that I'm not being greedy, that I'm not being, you know, egotistical, that I'm not, you know, doing all these other things that are traits I wouldn't want her to see in me. Mm-hmm. So it really helps me, I think, with keeping the right perspective. And again, just like holding myself accountable for the way that I'm acting, for the way that I'm treating Pretty Cool Strangers, for the way that, you know, all this stuff is kind of unfolding. Squeezing things into the limited time that I have is a sacrifice that is worth making. Mm-hmm. It's hard. It's insane, but it's the best.
It sounds it. One last question I want to ask you, because I realize we've been talking for almost an hour and it's gone really quickly. Where did you come up with the name Pretty Cool Strangers?
So I was playing, again, another interest I've lost was I was playing video games, and I was playing with these guys online, and they were like, you guys are all right. And I was like, yeah, we're some Pretty Cool Strangers. And it was like one of those things where you say something kind of random. You're like, that's a cool band name. Like that, you know, it was kind of a yeah. joke almost. I literally was like, that would be a cool name for something. Mm-hmm. So when Fee was like, you should start posting online, I'm like, I don't want to use my name. I don't, you know, mm-hmm. what am I supposed to do? And I was like, screw it. I'm just going to use Pretty Cool Strangers. And I think it's perfect. I love it so much. I like, yeah, I think it fits like everything. I've had people who were like, it fits your brand. It fits. And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about, but like, yeah, it literally just came by having a conversation with a couple of people online that I didn't know.
Amazing. I like that it's just like the most simple thing, like a conversation between people that
yeah it's just on. As random as the rest of this has been, like it's just, you know what I mean, it just like fell into my lap out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. So we need to mention where people can follow you and your shop and your website, so yeah, go for it. Promote the hell out of yourself.
Cool. So if you're interested in checking out my work or tutorials, currently the only place to find that is on Instagram at Pretty Cool Strangers. There's a lot of like great stuff to check out there. I have like more of my professional portfolio, and it's a brand new website that we launched a couple weeks ago, brand new shop, all sorts of like prints. And we have even like some Pretty Cool Strangers merch and Don't Go to Art School, some stuff like that. That's really fun. That's at prettycoolstrangers.com. And I would say if you're an aspiring creative or after listening to this, find yourself interested, feel free to just give me a follow, send me a DM, and just kind of like check out the tutorials and stuff that I have there and just start creating.
Amazing. Thank you so much again for giving up some of your time to chat to me. It's been really interesting.
Yeah, I've had a blast. It's nice kind of like taking a look back at everything that's happened so far and to hopefully give other people a little bit of inspiration where they might feel kind of stagnant or like there is no entryway that, you know, it can happen. It's weird and funky and scary sometimes, but just like go for it. Just do it. So thank you for asking me to come on.